Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. I have to wear a lot of makeup for my day job, but when I'm off camera, I'm all about ease and simplicity. Thrive Cosmetics has a full line of makeup to refresh your everyday look. One of my go-tos is their Brilliant Eye Brightener. It's ridiculously easy to put on, and it gives my eyes the little perfect pop in seconds. Refresh your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics, luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 10% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/off-camera. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/off-camera for 10% off your first order.
One of the PAs comes knocking on the set school door and goes, "Oh, you guys, you won't believe it. Matt Damon is going to be here today. His kids love the show. So he's going to be here in like 30 minutes. And I remember Dylan and I turning to each other and just going, "Ugh, I can't believe we have to get off of World of Warcraft right now."
Somebody going to cue me or do I cue myself?
Cue yourself.
Okay. Okay, let's do it. We're back with another episode of season two of Let's Talk Off Camera, yes. So let's get talking. Okay, today we are talking to someone who's been in front of the camera since he was in diapers. Baby, little tiny baby diapers. You know him as Cody Martin from The Sweet Life of Zach and Cody, Jughead Jones on Riverdale. Now you can see him as the creature in the new film Lisa Frankenstein. We are chatting with the very charming, he is on a charm offensive, Cole Sprouse, and I simply adore him.
You know him really well, right?
I know him really well. I feel like he is our oldest child, which is weird. So I guess theoretically I have twins. but he's just a doll face. I have vacationed with him. My kids actually lived with him in a share house for a minute.
That's right. Oh my gosh.
You know, he's just
because they had to quarantine.
They had to quarantine in Canada. They went out and they were out in Canada and they all lived together.
Oh wow.
And it was like a room, it was a house full of guys and then Casey Cott's wife Nicola. Poor Nicola.
Oh my
Poor Nicola.
Is this when Michael was on the show?
This is when Michael was on the show.
And the government had some weird quarantine laws.
Quarantine laws. And then Joaquin went out there. Not to be outdone, Joaquin went out there and because he was remote learning and he hadn't seen his dad in months and he was like, "I want to go out and I want to stay with the guys too." And I was like, "Okay, because no, you've got to be online for school 3 hours earlier you know." So he would get up and do his school. And he just had a blast. He just loved living with them. And they came. They're the ones that came up with the name for Joaquin. They call him Randall.
Randall
from Monsters Incorporated.
Uh-huh.
Because you know how Randall would just appear and then vanish? That is Joaquin. If you know Joaquin, you could be in a room with him for 35 minutes and not realize he's there. And then he vanishes. And you're like, "Wait, where'd he go?" And so they came up with the nickname Randall.
That's funny.
Which is funny. Anyway, how are you doing, Alan?
Good, better.
Yeah, good, better. You had the plague.
I had the flu. Yeah, it really like kicked my ass. It was bad. Fever, like everything. And the one thing that I forgot all about was Tylenol. And Tylenol, oh my God.
It's amazing.
2 hours after taking it, the fever immediately dropped back down. It was wild.
Tylenol, not a sponsor of the show, but should be. But should be.
It should be.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're heading to Vegas. Are you excited? What's the vibe?
I'm less excited now that I know you're not heading
to Vegas. I'm sorry.
I was very excited about that.
I know. We could have had some girl time.
The vibe in the house is very touch and go.
Okay.
Mark seems to think that something, I don't know what he thinks, but he's like, "You've got to prepare me for what this remote's going to be like." And I go, "It's going to be just like a remote." I mean, I don't really know how to prepare somebody. I'm like, "It's just the show. We're in another location."
Right.
I mean, there's not really much more to it, except that we spend the weekend before doing lots of tape pieces and showing people the best Las Vegas has to offer. And then Seth has to work 852 hours in 2 days to make it all come to fruition. What I don't understand is that Mark has gotten us tickets to shows at night. And I kept saying to him, well, you know, we're going to be so you know, we're going to be exhausted. First of all, we're going to be on East Coast time. Yeah. And second of all, we're going to be exhausted from all of the tape pieces we're doing.
Right.
But he booked shows that you might not be expecting Mark Consuelos to.
I want to know.
I will tell you off camera.
We're not off camera.
I'll tell you off mic. Off mic. Next year I'm going to have a podcast called Off Mic. And you have to buy tickets to my son's bedroom to come see it.
Are you guys planning on going back to your wedding?
We are. We're going to go back to the wedding chapel. We're going to go back to the Chapel of the Bells. Every 10 years, we make a pilgrimage to the Chapel of the Bells. And we look around and we go, it's exactly like how it was.
That's funny.
Because I think part of the charm is that they never change a thing. It looks like it's from the 50s. From the 50s. Gelman will try to talk Mark into renewing our vows.
Do not.
We'll never do that.
No.
We're both anti-vow renewal people, but I will do anything for TV because I'm so broken down from my career that I'm like, sure, whatever, Gelman.
Nope.
But Mark is like, nope. I've only been here 10 months and I still have a sense of self.
Not happening.
Yeah. Not happening.
Yeah. So not happening. I think it's the great curse, you know, when people constantly feel the need to get married.
Yeah.
I'm always like, why don't you think it took the first time?
I also think it's a therapist telling them to
renew your vows.
Reconnect. And that's a big sign. Oof.
aren't there other ways of reconnecting?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like go conversation, have sex with each other, have a conversation, put your phones down at dinner.
Take a vacation.
Seriously.
Take a vacation.
Seriously. Why? But it's a kiss of death in my mind.
No.
I'll tell you what.
Sorry for anybody out there.
If you want to reconnect, go to Iceland in the winter. In the winter. You got to go in the winter because that's when it's like the dark times. So you have very limited daylight. You're out and about. You're very active for 3 hours. And then you come back and you luxuriate and you relax. Maybe you go to the spa. Maybe you do a hot tub. It's so great.
I'm dying to go.
That was the reconnection trip.
And the water's so warm.
Oh my gosh, the water is hot. Well, it's all geothermal. I don't even, they kept explaining it to me and I was like, I'm too dumb to know what you're saying. I was just like, is it hot? Anyway, Jan, what's going on with you?
I took Caden skiing for the day.
Okay.
I mean, that's a lot of freaking work for one day.
Yeah, yeah. You're mom of the year.
And he's 16. He can carry his own skis. But still, I mean, the renting, the schlepping, all of it. It is so much. And I have to say, I'm a decent skier. But all of those MFs going down the hill and they're out of control was so scary. And I used to have no fear as a kid. I have so much fear now. I should not be skiing with that much fear. It was terrifying.
Jan said there was a slope in New Jersey that she went to.
We went to Mount Creek.
Oh, I don't know that.
It was an hour from my house. It was great. I mean, it was so easy. It was really easy. But it wasn't easy once we got there. Getting there was easy. The rest of it was crazy.
We went to our fourth grade ski trip. I've told this before. Fourth grade ski trip was to Ski Mountain, which in the summer was known as Action Park.
Oh, boy.
Yes. Oh, if you haven't seen the documentary Class Action Park, please watch it. It was a staple of my childhood. It will explain to you a lot about me as a human being. That's where we went for our fourth grade ski trip.
Ugh.
It was a hill. At the time, it seemed like a mountain. And now if I look down and I would
a driveway.
Now that I ski in Colorado, that's our hill. Yeah, that's just the hill to get to the house. Anyway, let's get to our guest. Let's get to our guest because he's
your
here.
Son. Your other
my,
son.
My oldest child. Hi. Mm. All right. Let me describe you for our listeners at home. So handsome. I see what looks like you've got your little partial mustache and your little chin. Is that, what's that called? Mark calls that a flavor saver.
Yeah, I had an existential crisis yesterday and decided to shave my facial hair into a goatee. So you caught me at a great time.
You look adorable. Thank you. You're so handsome.
Oh, go on.
And you know, I've got to tell you that I feel like I've known you for a really long time.
You have.
You and your brother. Mm-hmm. But I've known you as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
I knew you and your brother when you were youngsters and then teenagers. And it's mm-hmm. been a complete pleasure to know you as an adult.
Thank God.
I want to talk to you really quickly. Here's what I'm fascinated about. You went to college, you went to NYU, but you didn't study drama. You didn't study the creative arts. You went into anthropology?
I did. Yeah, I did. So I was an archaeological student, which within the United States is a subdivision of anthropology. So we had to do a bunch of different anthro courses. But I went to the School of Individualized Study, so I got to kind of build my own major, and I focused on archaeology and satellite imaging and some real techie stuff that would get really boring if I talked to you about it at length, trust me.
No, but that's cool. What made you want to go into that? Was it, if I become an adult and I never work again, this is something that fascinates me, or did you just take classes and it became fascinating then?
I think one of the biggest problems that archaeology actually has is there's really, really no funding. And it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard to secure a financially stable lifestyle as an archaeologist. There are a couple paths you can take professionally within archaeology that are a bit more stable, but it's pretty rare. So it's hard to find anybody that studies anthropology or archaeology that is not doing it as a labor of love.
Got it.
I fell in love with it. It was a labor of love. My grandfather was a geologist. I liked the idea. I actually wanted to study geology. And then I took some archaeological courses and I realized archaeology kind of served as an umbrella discipline to a lot of the other disciplines that I really wanted to study. And it got me out of the house. I was pretty sheltered from growing up in the industry. I grew up in a studio and was homeschooled. And the idea that it was this kind of romantic adventure that took me to foreign places to excavate and sleep in tents for 4 weeks sounded really cool to me at the time. And it's a really romantic lifestyle. It's very challenging. It's very competitive, but it's really exciting. And honestly, when you excavate, it is such a humbling and euphoric experience. I really don't know much else that compares to that overwhelming feeling that you get when you pull something out of the ground and you're the first person to see it in however many years. It's unbelievable.
What's the weirdest thing you've pulled out of the ground?
I was working at a rock shelter site in southern France called Abri-Castanet. And it was a Paleolithic site, which meant like early stone tech, some of the earliest Homo sapiens to arrive to Europe. Mm-hmm. And we pulled a stone knife out of the ground. And it's surreal when you do, because, you know, in this case, it was tens of thousands of years old, right?
Right.
A lot of the archaeological record, a lot of what you pull out of the ground is refuse. So it's kind of trash or it's forgotten objects that were left there and blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But it to be the first person to have held that in their hands in, you know, tens of thousands of years was surreal and humbling. And it's this weird process of kind of reconciling how impermanent everything is around you, while also grappling with like your own mortality in this incredible sense of time and scale. And
did it make you, it made you think about like, will they find me buried next to my Teen Choice Awards?
Yeah, exactly.
Will I be?
Yeah. Where am I going to put my, my gold plated kaleidoscope blimp from the Kids Choice Awards? It's humbling. It was really humbling. And in fact, I still to this day attribute some of the best and most inspiring pieces of knowledge that I have
acquired for acting came from those moments in archaeology and anthropology when you traveled around and met and talked and had these incredibly humbling experiences.
It's kind of amazing they haven't put you in one of those Jurassic Park movies. I mean,
yeah.
Truly.
I know.
Let's get on that. Can we reach out?
Jones.
Yeah. Young Indiana Jones. Can't we talk to Spielberg? What's going on?
You talk to Spielberg. Okay. I will start to build a tomb for my Teen Choice Award. And I think right around the same time, we'll secure the bag.
So I want to go back for a second because before you go to college, you and your brother become mega, mega Disney celebrities, mega, on The Suite Life of Zack and Cody. I mean, you know, my kids grew up with you. It was like, we had the magazines, we had the comic books, we had the whole thing. And you told me a really funny story about, you know, set school, because I worked on a sitcom mm-hmm. and there were kids on our show. Mm-hmm. And when my kids would visit me at work, the kids were in set school and they thought that was the penultimate of glamour, going to set school. But you guys were like assholes in set school, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were notoriously bad kids for the student teacher union. I mean, the actual set school union was terrified of us because we had a teacher on Big Daddy named Laura Torrance, who we fell in love with. She was like our grandmother. And when we booked Disney, we wanted her to come and teach us. But they kept saying, no, we can't send Laura. We can't send Laura, blah, 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 blah. So my brother and I created a hit list of teachers in the student teacher union that my brother would draw these caricatures of the set teachers that would come in, and we would underneath their portraits mark how many days they stayed with us. We were horrible. I mean, truly devils. And eventually they ended up sending us the head of the student teacher union to come in and teach us a lesson, you know?
Right.
I think her name was Polly or something. And she lasted one day. And the very next day we got Laura.
You finally got Laura. Yes. Yay, Laura. What was her magic?
She was just so sweet and funny.
I like that you called her a grandmother type. And I bet you if I knew her age, she was probably like 32 at the time. Something like that.
No, I think she was actually already a grandmother by the time she was with us.
But
she's a genius. She's one of those real eccentric geniuses. And she's still like a grandma to me. She, not to expose her, but you would walk in and she would be chewing her toenails or something. And it was like, whoa, who is this real crazy lady? But she was so smart. She was most of the kids that she taught all pursued higher education. And I still think, you know, it was under her advice that she recommended we do not take the CHESPE exam, which would have emancipated my brother and I to become legal working adults, but would have crippled us in our ability to actually apply to colleges. She was the one that really stepped in and said, they're not doing that. They're taking the SAT or the ACT and they're going to be able to apply to colleges. I mean, she still is a genuine force. And everyone that's worked with her over the years is just in love with her. She's the best.
Who did better on their SAT, you or Dylan?
I don't know. The SAT.
That means Dylan.
The SAT was weird. we both ended up getting into the same school, so I guess it didn't matter so much. But
yeah, right.
Because we were homeschooled and then we had to take the exams at a public school, like a public high school. So we went to one.
Was that weird to see like other kids?
It was actually awesome. It was actually totally awesome because everyone was so damn nervous that day. So it didn't really matter. You know, right. Who was there. But it was, it was really thanks to her that we even did that.
That's great. I'm glad that she had like the forethought about your futures in that way.
I think it is my biggest piece of advice to any young actor that is thinking about going to college. Because when you're young, you know, one, all you want to do is be considered an adult. That's right. Like, that is the currency of like the late teenage experiences. I want people to treat me like I'm an adult. So the idea of getting emancipated early to be able to work as a legal adult not only is appealing to any production that wants you to work, but also to you, because it makes you right. seem mature. Right. And my biggest piece of advice is don't do that. Do right. not do that. Right. If you are genuinely considering going to school, you know, do the thing. It's hard work, but focus on it.
So when you guys were, you know, you're coming of age, you're on this wildly popular show, were the girls throwing themselves at you? I mean, I'm trying to.
Yeah, you know, it's odd though, because Dylan and I had bowl cuts for like 15 right. years, you
to
know?
To keep you young looking, right?
Yeah, they like, to keep you like I right. looked like a little Dutch girl until I was 21. And so we weren't introverted, but we spent a lot of our youth playing video games and stuff. So there were rarely opportunities for girls to even come and say hi to us until we got to right. college.
But you would have like really famous people visit you on the set, right? Wouldn't you have like famous people
did
come?
Did I ever tell you the Matt Damon story? The Matt Damon story is incredible. So my brother and I were in set school at the time, and we were really into World of Warcraft. I mean, this was like yeah, what we. Course. I'm sure Mikey played. I'm sure.
Yep. Mikey loved World of Warcraft.
Yeah. So Dylan and I were obsessed, and one of the PAs comes knocking on the set school door and goes, "Oh, you guys, you won't believe it. Matt Damon is going to be here today. His kids love the show. So he's going to be here in like 30 minutes." And I remember Dylan and I turning to each other and just going, "Ugh. I can't believe we have to get off of World of Warcraft right now." And we must have been 15, you know, and right. sure enough, 30 minutes, Matt Damon knocks on the door, and there's like every crew member is behind him in the hall, just like looking and amazed at Matt Damon. And I don't know if Dylan and I even turned away from our computers to say hi. Oh, this was God. How ridiculous we were as children. I think he came in and was like, "Hey guys, wow, so nice to meet you." And we were like, "Yeah, yeah, hey man, hey, how you doing?" And just went right back to the game. And I look back on that story now, and I'm actually like, I love it, because it, you know, the whole ethos of whatever that was around us didn't really affect us more than
it
than,
escaped you completely.
That we were just being kids and playing video games. And I'm sure, you know, if I ever meet Matt Damon again, I'm just going to say I'm sorry and it'll be all good.
One day, you know what it is? One day you'll have kids and you'll understand. They're going to want you to take them to something to meet some young kids somewhere.
Absolutely.
And you'll be like, you don't have to turn around from the computer screen. I know what you're doing. I know this is important. So let's talk Riverdale, because, sure. you know, you have this crazy amount of fame early on in your life. And then you go off to college. You sort of, you don't fall off the radar, but you go off to college. You learn other things. You do other things. And then you get sucked back into the business.
Mm.
And you are back on this show that becomes the juggernaut of, once again, being that show that all young people watch.
Mm.
And were you like, because I know there were, obviously Mark was one of them, there were actual like dads on the set, actual like moms on the set. But did you feel a sense of, guys, look, I'm going to walk you through what it's like to be famous, or don't get sucked into this trap of, you know, fast fame? Were you the advice giver?
I, you know, it's funny. I think a lot of people anticipated that I would bring like some kind of Disney Channel understanding, or at least like first round understanding into Riverdale. But I think the landscape had changed so much by the time I was back in the industry. I mean, when Zach and Cody was, you know, at its peak, and right before we left to college, Twitter had been out for like a year. Right. Then in the 5 years I was away from acting, all of these social media sites and this kind of huge weaponization from an industry perspective towards utilizing social media as a means of selling content and selling TV and celebrity and all this was a thing. So to be honest, I was learning this brand new landscape as well. I couldn't have anticipated the success. I couldn't have known what to do with the success. And also, I was so different. I mean, it was kind of the first time as a sort of fully conscious and confident adult that I was able to go back into the industry and go, okay, I'm going to navigate this with my own identity now. But at the time, you know, I think people expected me to have a much greater understanding of it than I did. It was a huge learning process for me too, honestly.
When Mark got there, I've got to tell you, you stood out to him in such a profound way. He said, you know, one of the actors I'm working with, you know him. And I was the one watching Riverdale, and I was like, Mark, he got the call to do this show, and he's like, they want me to play the dad. And I go, what did you think you were going to play? One of the hot young guys? And so I go, yeah. No, you have to do this show. This show is actually really good. It's really, really good. You have got to do it. But he walked away with this, he just loved you instantly. And I said, you know, I'm glad to hear that he's still great. So here's my question to you. What's Mark like on the set? Is he a bit of a weirdo? Is he like does he think he's a dad? Does he think he's one of the kids? Like, give me the 411.
Oh, he handles shit, man. I get yeah. it. The second he was you on the set, I was like, I get why Kelly married this guy. This guy,
really?
This guy's hot, man. This guy's hot.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. No, I think one of the reasons Mark and I got along so well, and like why I got along with Skeet and Machen and some of the older actors, is that there's a markedly different approach to professionalism that came from that kind of pre-social media acting
experience.
Boot camp.
Yes,
you know, right. I really do think there is, and you know, Mark was always on the forefront of making sure everyone felt okay, and I think one of the things we used to be taught a lot in the pre-social media acting realm was that one of the unwritten parts of your job as an actor is that you're the cheerleader for the crew when shit hits the fan, which it always does, mm-hmm. because it's a yeah. miracle that anything even gets done on a film set.
Isn't it amazing? I'm amazed every day.
Mm-hmm. So I think he understood that. He was always making sure the crew was taken care of, and I really admired that with him, and a lot of the, you know, older actors on set were of that same philosophy. And, you know, I'm hoping that it rubbed off on most of us as much as it could, but Mark really took charge of stuff, and that was really admirable. And that's why we became such close friends.
It was so funny. He said, you know, Cole, and I didn't realize until I met you again as an adult, he kept saying, Cole is like Michael. Cole and Michael are like yeah. the same person. And as soon as I saw you, and you, I don't know if you even remember, we were in Mark's apartment. You ran over, you sort of flopped over on me. You gave me a hug, but it, like, you flopped over. And yeah. I was like, my God, Cole is like Michael. And
I've been playing just, video you know, games with Michael for the last yeah, 2 days. I
yes,
hope you should know that, by the
right.
way.
Yes, right. So to confirm or deny this, because Jan told me this. This is something that I never knew. And I still don't know if you were fucking with Jan or if this is true. Was there a tanning bed on set at Riverdale? And was there a sign-up sheet to get in the tanning bed?
No, it was not on set. But I will say that the entire cast were no strangers to the tanning booths okay. in the greater
so
Vancouver
where,
area.
Oh, okay. So you would go somewhere like at a gym or a
oh,
tanning
yeah, yeah.
salon.
And it was, at uh-huh. least amongst the boys on set, it was this kind of unwritten, don't really acknowledge it, but we are all doing it sort right. of thing. Look, it the sun is a pretty rare event in Vancouver. You have to get as much vitamin D as you can. Even if it's artificial. And so we would go to, I think it was called like Sun Salon or something. And we would just pressure cook ourselves for about 5 to 15 minutes inside the booth and come away with a nice bronze look.
You know, I would go months without seeing Mark. And you really became his family. I don't mm-hmm. mind telling you that. And I'm so grateful. I really am very grateful that you two had each other mm-hmm. and that you were, I was telling these guys at the table that you all quarantined together.
Oh, yeah.
You were in this share house in mm-hmm. Whistler.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call it a tough time. That's for sure.
No.
It was yeah. great. It was yeah. great. We all played video games together. It was awesome.
I want to talk about one of my favorite parts of your life is Ari. I just mm-hmm. absolutely love and adore her. And you're such a lovely couple.
Mm-hmm.
And do you see, I hate to be this person, so it's going to be the gross question.
Are you looking for a clickbait title? Is that what?
No, I'm not.
Yes.
I'm not.
Yes.
Yeah,
Janice.
Yeah, I can tell.
Tell us not Janice.
The reason I'm bringing this up is because, Mark and I are both ordained ministers.
Oh, right. Oh,
so,
yeah, of course.
If that were to ever happen, do yeah. you see one of us performing the ceremony? And if so, which one would you choose?
No, great, great question. I think the way I imagined it was you're on Mark's shoulders. Both of you are in one giant trench coat and you're doing it at the same time would be ideal.
Well, we'll work on that. So let's
talk about the marriage question.
He's side-skirting that. Jan wants me to pin you down.
She's a keeper. I met her. She's a keeper.
Yeah, she is a keeper.
I mean,
can I tell you something honestly?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Remember when you guys came for dinner a couple of weeks ago?
Uh-huh.
So Mark said to me, he goes, I think that Cole's going to tell me they're engaged. So I just want to prepare you. So I was like, okay, so should I get, now I'm like, I had roots. I needed to get my hair dyed. I'm like, should I get my hair dyed? I don't know what to do. Like, what do I wear? I was so nervous that you were going to tell us.
Why would he say that?
I don't know. And then it didn't happen. And I was like,
I really dropped the ball on that one, didn't I?
No, but I literally, my kidneys hurt by the end of the meal because I was so like, I had like this
waiting.
Adrenaline thing happening. And you were like, every time you were like, well, Kelly. And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Here's what I will say, just to so I'm not skirting around your question anymore, so you don't have to keep telling me about your kidneys.
I know what I'm buying my mom friends for Mother's Day. Fiori joggers. Jan is obsessed. My stylist Audrey is obsessed. So I know they're a sure hit. And if any one of my family or friends are listening to this podcast, hint, hint, these would be a great gift for me. They're designed with their dream knit stretch fabric, which I love because they're so ridiculously comfortable, but yet look so good. By the way, they're not just for women. I'm ordering them right now for Mark because Father's Day is right around the corner. No matter how you stay active, running, swimming, yoga, or just running weekend errands, Vuori is for you. Vuori is offering Let's Talk Off Camera with Kelly Ripa listeners 20% off your first purchase. Get some of the most comfy and versatile clothing on the planet at vuori.com/offcamera. That's VUORI.com/offcamera. You'll also enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to VUORI.com/offcamera and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Look, I know you know that I know that you know how busy we all get. Ollie can help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 years and up. And the new Ollie Brainy Chews support healthy brain function with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Ollie!
Here's what I will say. I'm sure you understand this with Mark, too, because when real compatibility comes into your life, it makes almost everything in the past feel like a lesson or a stepping stone to what you've arrived to now. And mm-hmm. I think this is the first time in my life, at least, and I'm not putting any of it on a timetable, but the first time in my life where I've been so wholly and completely able to be myself in a relationship. And I think that is a tremendous testament to her and the way she carries herself. And, you know, she looks up to you quite a bit. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Ari and I have gotten so close to you and Mark, because I think you guys represent a kind of masculinity and femininity that we both find so admirable, especially in 2024. And those definitions of masculinity and femininity are changing so rapidly for our generations and younger. And I think we both see you guys as such a testament to the power of that. And, you know, I get, especially since Dylan and Barbara, and now my dad has gotten remarried, I'm the last unmarried spouse. I'm getting this question all the time. I will say, Ari, with her eternal gracefulness and elegance, has never put any pressure on a situation, especially from a public perspective at all. And I love that. So we're taking it one day at a time.
You know, I always say this. What's interesting is not everybody needs to get married. Mm-hmm. Not everybody needs to. It should be something that is like, if it's something you both want to do, it should be on your timetable and at your leisure. And you shouldn't have to answer these questions from loudmouths like me. But I actually was just curious because absolutely. Mark had me convinced that you were coming.
That's
and he
so
was like,
funny.
I think maybe they want to tell us they're engaged. And I was like, oh, so okay. Funny. And I was like, are they asking our permission? Like, it's like, it just, I didn't understand what he was telling me, but he was convinced of it. But anyway, you're just a beautiful couple, and I just adore spending time with both of you.
Oh, of course.
It's got to be when you are, because I'm fascinated with adult twins, as I've told you and anybody that knows me, when one twin gets married, it does create this weird.
Oh, but by the way, that happens with marriage, that happens with, you know, academics, that happens with whatever. I do think twins serve as kind of a control group for a lot of people on comparison. Like I think, you know, the questions we get, we're so used to, Dylan and I, all the time when we were growing up, is, you know, who's better, who's faster, who's stronger, who's this, who's that. And I don't think that comes from any place of maliciousness, but I think it's genuinely because twins are fascinating to people as a kind of almost experimental impulse that we all have to see what would happen if you were dragged and dropped into different situations. But I will say, kudos to my brother for getting such a wonderful, wonderful wife who tolerates his most obnoxious behaviors on a day-to-day basis. Really, truly, what an angel she is to have to deal with Dylan Sprouse.
Do they ever talk to you about having kids? Do you think they'll have kids?
I think so. I think it's funny because the rules have changed so much for our generation. Like when I turned 30, as an example, I was standing on the beach and I had long hair and I kind of had this ragged goatee that I'm rocking now. And I was standing there and I realized I was standing on the same beach that my father was standing on when he was 30. With the same hair and the same goatee, except he at that point already had two twin boys for 3 years running around him on the beach.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy, right?
And I think the timetable has just changed for all of us so much. Like I think about when my father was married and I think about when he had kids and you know, when my mother and father took those kind of steps in their life. And most of our parents' generation did it a lot younger than we did. You know, as I've hit the age where, you know, I'm already almost 4 years older than my father would have been when he had kids, and close to 6 years older than he would have been when he was married. And you go, oh, wow, like It's
crazy.
And you look back and you go, man, he was a kid. Like he was genuinely a kid when he did that. So I don't know. I think my brother and Babs, who are so wonderful and perfect together, I think they're kind of taking their time and figuring it out, but I absolutely see them taking that step sometime soon. And it'll be nice because then my father will stop asking me when I'm going to do it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the thing is, it's like I look at it this way. I always say, because we did it so young, and I'm like, nobody should be allowed to get married until they're 30. Mm. Because you are married for the rest of your life. You have kids forever. You have kids for the rest of your life. And they're always your children, no matter how old they get.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I know about twins. Twins, that's like a genetic thing. Mm-hmm. So there's a chance that you could have twins.
Yeah, so actually, fraternal and sororal twins are genetic. Identical twins are purely happenstance.
And are you identical twins?
I think every year that passes, Dylan and I look, more fraternal. More. I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah.
But
allegedly you're identical twins, meaning that's an anomaly.
That is an anomaly. I think it's the maternal lineage's ability to pass down fraternal or sororal twins is dictated by the mother's ability to produce two eggs simultaneously. So that it can be genetically determined, whereas identical twins are purely happenstance.
Spoken like an anthropological major.
My goodness.
Yeah. See that?
Yeah.
Write that down because we didn't know that.
Yeah.
No. I was like, they're going to have twins. They're going to have all sorts of twins. So I want to talk about Lisa Frankenstein. And, when I watch you, because I've watched you prepare for a couple of film projects, you really immerse yourself into the work. Mm. When you're playing the creature, how do you prepare for that? I mean, you've always been so verbal.
Yeah, I know. I think it was about time I shut up.
No,
dude.
But I'm curious. I'm truly curious how you made that work.
I worked with a mime.
Uh-huh.
He was awesome. So I worked with him on a lot of the sort of physical gestural movement stuff. But I watched a lot of these silent movie stars like Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
I think we kind of built the character around that. And then, you know how it is. I think when you're on set, like the script is in a lot of ways kind of just theoretical until you're on set. And then you're working with the other actors and you're in the stage and you're engaging in the dialogue for the first time and your director is creating an open enough collaborative space to allow you to play. And I think those elements condition, how easily one can get into character more than anything else. And Zelda created a space that was open enough to allow all of us on the cast to just kind of play and have fun. And then, the editor defended our performances. So I think all the stuff that happens beforehand is kind of just fun and you hope creates a tool for your toolkit that you can pull out, but you don't really know if it's going to work. You just kind of hope it does and that your Swiss Army knife has enough on it to be able to do whatever you need.
So when you see it, when you're seeing it for the first time, do they show you, and forgive my ignorance, I'm asking you this in earnest.
Yeah.
Do they show you advanced copies? Are you watching the dailies? Are you in a position where they're asking your opinions about things?
No, and actually, I'm for me personally, I don't do that, and I never do that. I can't watch myself. I'm intensely critical of myself, and I don't feel like any opinion I would have on watching whatever I just did would be valid or coming from a place that was not insecurity or like an emotional space. I don't have the ability to watch that stuff objectively. So I choose to take myself out of that process completely. To be honest, I have not seen maybe 90% of the stuff I've ever done in my life because I just can't do it.
That's very healthy, I'm sure. I'm sure that's actually very healthy.
And it's common. I think I've met two different kinds of actors, ones that have easy times watching themselves and ones that don't. And I think they're both super valid approaches to what it is. But I also think just the way I understand acting is that you kind of only control what happens on the set, and then whatever it becomes afterwards is really not your baby anymore. So it doesn't make sense to even get all emotionally tied up in it. So I just prefer not to.
It's a shame that you've never seen yourself. You're so good. You're really, really good.
Well, I appreciate
that. You're
one
of my favorite actors. You really are.
I would like to think that because I just, nobody can get rid of me, that I've stuck around long enough at this point to actually be adaptable enough to do stuff.
Wait, Jen has a question.
Have you ever had the Austin Butler thing where you can't shake a role?
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's a good question.
I don't think I've ever had a role where I've needed to go that deep. I think Austin Butler, I think, is an incredible talent and also just the sweetest guy ever. I met that kid when I was young because he used to be, you know, doing a lot of kids shows too. I've not had a part where I've had to mimic or embody the spirit of a lived person, especially not like the king. You know what I mean? Like Elvis that's a huge role. And I think he did a wonderful job. So much so that he completely embodied the spirit of that character. And I can only imagine it would be hard to lose. I also think it differs from person to person. I think some people really have a kind of Stanislavski approach to building a role where they embody and they live in that character for months in pre-production and then during production, and then they have to dispose of it afterwards. But I will say one of the biggest lessons I've learned about myself as a professional is that I don't have the greatest disposal rituals. So some actors, when they're finished, they have these rituals that they practice in order to get rid of the energy and whatever it is, you know, and it sounds kind of Californian, blah, 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 but it's actually behaviors and etiquette that you sort of adopt over time. And some people really practice certain rituals to get rid of those. I don't.
Whatever you pick up, it sticks with you.
Yeah, I don't. I've really never asked myself before turning 30, like, what are those rituals that I have to get rid of that stuff? So that is something I've been looking into recently, I guess.
Well, you got rid of being a mime.
Yeah, no, yeah, totally. I'm like the most vocal guy ever. that one was easy to get rid of.
You should win an Academy Award. Yeah, I'm not kidding. I'm literally like, how did he do that?
get rid of the mime. That's great.
So when you are thinking about all of the jobs you've had, all of the jobs you have yet to do, there's this rumor that keeps coming up. Jan keeps talking about it. I've read about it. Is there going to be a big daddy, big granddaddy movie? And will you star in it? Malojo, my production company, is such a small business. So when we hire someone, it makes a huge impact. And Albert, I know you wear so many hats over there, you might not have the time or the resources to hire, but LinkedIn changes all of that. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. So, Albert, the next time we're hiring, if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get qualified candidates within 24 hours. We got Roz, so we know it works. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/offcamera. That's linkedin.com/offcamera to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Are you tired of scrubbing your bathroom clean? I am. Transform your bathroom cleaning with Wet and Forget weekly shower cleaner. Just spray today and rinse tomorrow for a no-scrub clean. With over 33,000 five-star reviews, it's your once-a-week solution to keeping your tub and shower surfaces sparkling clean. Available at Amazon, Lowe's, Menards, Home Depot, and Ace Hardware. Join thousands who have switched to an easier clean. Get Wet and Forget weekly shower cleaner today and make your bathroom sparkle with zero scrubbing. Albert, I know you're too busy to be frizzy, so grab Way's new anti-frizz cream. It's a lightweight cream that provides immediate frizz control that lasts for up to 72 hours. I'm loving it because it helps reduce and repair split ends while quenching my bone dry hair with intense hydration. And during the summer, that's something we could all use. You'll also be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers like I am. My new favorite is their scalp and body scrub. It's a blend of sugar and coconut oil that cleanses, exfoliates, and moisturizes all at once on your scalp and your skin. I'm also really into their wave spray for this summer. It's a weightless, salt-free mist that gives you that just out of the ocean and my hair dried perfectly look. You know, like that look that is so unattainable. It doesn't make my hair crunchy at all, and it's super easy to use. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code OFFCAMERA for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code OFFCAMERA. Is there going to be a big daddy, big granddaddy movie?
Large Father 2.
Yeah, Large Father 2.
I don't know. I'm not to quell any mystery or intrigue, but I've not heard anything of it. I think it's funny. I think especially since the rise of social media, people are obsessed with opening the time capsule of the pre-social media film and television and, you know, renewing it for some modern audience. My stance on that has always been do not do that. I get asked a lot if my brother and I would think about rebooting Zack and Cody. I get asked a lot
about the Big Daddy stuff. Oh my gosh, I would love that.
And I know a lot of people would love it, but I also don't really have one great example where it works and it's better than the original. And two, I think it's usually a means of kind of dusting off some old trinket on the shelf that used to make you happy and letting it, I guess, get a new kind of tarnish on it. And I think it's beautiful that stuff like Big Daddy or stuff that like Zack and Cody live in kind of this golden bubble of nostalgic childhood that is almost untouchable. And then the second you bring it back into the future, into now, you make it touchable again. And I don't know if that's a healthy way of looking at media.
Godfather 2 was pretty good. And I think that Zack and Cody could be the Godfather 2 of television.
I say that all the time. He can direct it.
You can direct it.
I wouldn't, though.
He wouldn't. He doesn't want to direct it, Chan.
I would never do it. I know it always makes people upset when I have this answer because I think people want me to say yes. I think people want to know that something like that is coming. But I as I've gotten older, I'm fiercely protective of my own childhood. And I think in a way I'm protective of whatever nostalgia other people's childhoods have with that period of film and television. And I think it's okay that it lives there.
Kelly could play your mom.
Yes, that's right. Jan just said I could play your mom, and you're robbing me of this wonderful opportunity.
Oh, right.
To play your mom.
Damn. We could have made some real cash off this, huh?
We could have made some cash off this. I want the Sweeter Life of Zack and Cody to be the Godfather 2 of the Disney Channel.
That's going to be the quote that I'm going to inscribe on my headstone.
That's how you lead in the pitch meeting.
Yeah, exactly.
Picture the Godfather 2. I want to do that for the Disney Channel.
Yeah, talk about a great elevator pitch.
That's right. Now, listen, you're a brilliant photographer, photographer.
I'm liking this podcast, Kelly. It seems like you just hyped me up the whole time. This is dope.
No, but it's true. I've seen your work. And by the way, my favorite photo of Mark and me ever taken was taken by Cole Sprouse.
Wow.
So,
I got one.
Do you picture yourself like maybe making a film, directing, or being a director of photography on a film?
Yeah.
Like, would you ever see yourself helming a project that way?
Yeah, I think eventually. I think what I've learned about myself, though, over the years is that I'm a big control freak when it comes to what I produce. And I think the funny thing about acting is that depending on the job and depending on the kind of collaboration you have with the other departments, it can be incredibly empowering, or you can feel like you don't have that much agency. Mm-hmm. Whereas with photography, I feel like I have a ton of agency. And that's been a really healthy balance for me to have personally, to have this place where I helm the ship in a lot of ways, and this place where I can afford to be more passive. And so I'd like to think whatever crossroads in the future of both the acting and photo world culminates in some kind of directorial thing. But I'm really protective, and I'm also incredibly well versed in the language of financiers and studios and how they are trying to push certain agendas. And I think I would have to adopt a much more flexible understanding of the creative process if I was willing to take that leap right now, and I don't think I'm there yet, personally.
Yeah. Oh, what are you showing me here?
The
The Charles Melton. Okay. So Jan is pulling up the Charles Melton photo shoot that you did.
Oh, the dog one?
The dog one.
Yeah.
And here's the question. How did you get that dog to look so lovingly at Charles Melton?
I think it's the way Charles smells. Most dogs are just attracted to this this earthy smell of masculine.
Earthy smell of Melton.
Yeah, yeah. The earthy Melton. Yeah, no, I think they just love them.
Is it easier to shoot somebody like Charles that you know so well, or was it more difficult?
I kind of find it more difficult. Charles and I have wanted to do this shoot for a long time, but I find when you can afford first impressions with someone that you're photographing, you can genuinely get a bit more agency and maneuverability around a set. Whereas with Charles, he and I are so quickly able to call each other on our bullshit that it's hard to pull the wool over Charles' eyes, you know?
It's hard to have the authority. You can't have the authority in that moment.
When it's one of your best buddies, he's like, cut it out. And vice versa. You know, it was great. I mean, Charles is always a trooper.
He's so photogenic, Charles.
Oh, I mean,
he really is.
Are you kidding me? That's the strongest jawline I've seen in the industry. That guy could probably crush a watermelon just by pointing his chin downward. I think he's so handsome, it's almost hard to look at him through the camera lens. I'm like, I gotta get out of here, man.
And he's as lovely as he is handsome.
Oh, he's the best. He's the best.
He really is. Well, I gotta tell you, this has been a pleasure. I've so enjoyed our podcast today. How do you feel about it? How do you think it went?
I think it went so incredible. And as long as I can keep getting invited for dinner, I'm just going to keep saying it was the best ever.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So if you...
Here we go.
This is a note from... So Albert's here too, by the
okay,
way.
Okay, great.
Cool. Hey, Albert.
So Albert goes, if you do get engaged, would you surprise us at dinner?
Yeah, how about this? I'll make the entire engagement about how we break the news to you guys.
Can I just propose with you guys there?
It is such a quintessential Mark Consuelos.
So
that he was like, Ari and Cole are coming to dinner. They're in town. I think they're about to tell us they're engaged. As if that's why you were there. Mm-hmm. Not that you had Lisa Frankenstein to promote.
No, no.
You were on a promotional tour. Ari had modeling stuff to do. There was a lot going on in their lives. And Mark broke it down to, they flew across country to tell us they're engaged because we are so important.
You do understand that every time we want to hang out now, I'm going to be like, hey guys, I got news.
Yeah,
you have to every single time I reach out to you guys now.
Anytime you reach out to Mark, just on a personal level, say like hello, you have to catch it with,
bud.
Hey, do you have a minute? Got something to discuss?
Yeah,
really important. You have to
just ignore the rose petals that are in the house.
You have to just couch everything like it's very urgent and it's something you can only discuss with him.
I do want to see how far you guys will go to prepare the house for coming over for dinner.
Well, you saw the meal and the crudité, hors d'oeuvres.
I'm, ex- I'm expecting like a live pianist and
there'll be confetti cannons.
I can't wait.
He'll have a harpist. You name it.
I'm gonna pick the most inconvenient time for you guys ever too.
Oh yes. Like I'll give you Joaquin's college graduation day. Yeah, and yeah. Like you make it that weekend.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Absolutely.
Okay. Give my love to Ari and thank you for chatting with us. I really appreciate it. We love you. Cole Sprouse, everybody. Go see Lisa Frankenstein. Make sure you check it out.
Bye, guys.
Bye. See you later. And I got to tell you, that was as delightful as I knew it would be.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
That was amazing.
Wait, Jen has a question. Go ahead.
Today on the show, we did a pizza taste test, right?
Pizza taste test.
Detroit versus New York.
10 a.m.
So good, Detroit style.
Well,
delicious.
Which do you like better?
Here's the thing. Let me just say that I pushed my hunger button so early that I have been, as you can tell, I'm chewing in this podcast. I've been eating all day. I never stopped eating. I started eating the first piece of pizza, went to the second piece of pizza. Mm. Then I went to the Guy Fieri tortilla quesadilla pizza, which was bonkers. Then I went backstage and I had, sorry, Dr. Joffrey, a protein bar because I felt like I needed something sweet to wash down all of the...
I love that you're apologizing for a protein bar.
All of the stuff. So I really think that both were excellent.
Mm-hmm.
The New York style is a more convenient piece of pizza.
Uh-huh.
It is efficient. It's convenient. You can eat it on the go. The Detroit style is a sit down, have for dinner, have for lunch piece of pizza. I enjoy the consistency and the crustiness and the lustiness of the Detroit style pizza. I also like the fact that you can scrape the sauce off the top because sometimes sauce gives me acid reflux. Right. So I like to be able to...
Because of the garlic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the New York style is a very convenient on-the-go piece of pizza.
And that was a good one, right? That one's from Little Italy.
Yeah, it was delicious.
And it's like thin and it's got that cornmeal thing on the bottom.
Cornmeal on the bottom, very cheesy.
Thin. Yeah. Yeah, that's one of my favorite ones. Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Spumoni Gardens pizza, though.
So wait, what's the answer? Which did you like better?
It's like asking me which one of my kids I like better.
Yeah, but Joaquin. You have a favorite.
But when it comes to pizza, I truly am like, I could eat any pizza. I don't think there are. Listen, I flew home on Icelandic Airways, and they had a problem with their water system. And they said, we're so sorry. We can only offer you pizza or lasagna. And I was like, this is a problem. I was waiting to hear the problem.
Where's the problem?
I said, I'll have the pizza. It was pizza that was in a like a pre-packaged box that was like obviously just microwaved pizza. And that was delicious. And I know it's not
7-Eleven pizza.
It was like 7-Eleven pizza. It was like pizza that you would get out of a vending machine. It was delicious. I stand by my statement. Elio's, the pizza square from the lunchroom, it doesn't matter. Right. It's all good. There is nothing wrong with pizza. No.
We are big fans of Elio's in our house.
Really? Yeah, you can't get a bad pizza.
It's just
pizza.
The easiest thing, and it reminds us of our childhood.
It's our childhood pizza, and you can't, there's nothing bad. It's like, why do we have to have pizza wars? There should be no pizza wars.
No,
it's
pizza
like,
wars.
It's like pitting women against each other. It's like, why do we have to have a who wore it better?
Okay.
All pizza is good pizza.
All pizza.
Yeah, so that's it. That's all you get for today. Don't forget to tell your friends to listen and follow the latest episodes of Let's Talk Off Camera with Kelly Ripa wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to review us and give us 5 stars. That is mandatory. That is the way. By the way, I have never once reviewed us or given us 5 stars.
Well, we're going to do that right now.
Generosity starts at home. I should take, you know, but I feel like that's, I feel like it's an asshole move to give myself 5 stars, but I should, right?
Yes.
Anyway, so don't forget to do that. And we'll talk to you all off camera next week. Bye, everybody. Let's Talk Off Camera with Kelly Ripa is a production of Melojo Productions with help from Goat Rodeo. Our theme song is Follow Me from APM Music. From Melojo, our team is Kelly Ripa, Mark Consuelos, Albert Bianchini, Jan Chalet, Devin Schneider, Michael Halpern, Jacob Small, Roz Therian, Seth Gronquist, and Julia Desch from Goat Rodeo.
our team is Kara Schillen, Megan Nadolski, Max Johnston, Isabel Kirby McGowan, and Rebecca Seidel. Additional sound design by Terrence Bernardo. This show is powered by Stitcher.